The reports of the conventions held in Seneca Falls and Rochester, New York in 1848 attracted the attention of one destined to take a most important part in the new movement, Susan B. Anthony, who for her courage and executive ability was facetiously called by William Henry Charming the Napoleon of our struggle. At this time, she was teaching in the academy at Canajoharie, a little village in the beautiful valley of the Mohawk. The Woman's Declaration of Independence issued from those conventions startled and amused her, and she laughed heartily at the novelty and presumption of the demand. But on returning home to spend her vacation, she was surprised to find that her sober Quaker parents and sisters, having attended the Rochester meetings, regarded them as very profitable and interesting, and the demands made as proper and reasonable. She was already interested in the anti-slavery and temperance reforms and was an active member of an organization called the Daughters of Temperance and had spoken a few times in their public meetings. But the new gospel of women's rights found a ready response in her mind, and from that time her best efforts have been given to the enfranchisement of woman. It was in the month of May of 1851 that I first met Miss Anthony. That was to both of us an eventful meeting that in a measure henceforth shaped our lives. How well I remember the day I first met my lifelong friend. George Thompson and William Lloyd Garrison having announced an anti-slavery meeting in Seneca Falls, Miss Anthony came to attend it. These gentlemen were my guests. Walking home after the adjournment, we met Mrs. Bloomer and Miss Anthony on the corner of the street waiting to greet us. There she stood with her good, earnest face and genial smile, dressed in gray silk, hat and all the same color, relieved with pale blue ribbons, the perfection of neatness and sobriety. I liked her thoroughly, and why I did not at once invite her home with me to dinner, I do not know. She accuses me of that neglect, and has never forgiven me, as she wished to see and hear all she could of our noble friends. I suppose my mind was full of what I had heard, or my coming dinner, or the probable behavior of three mischievous boys who had been busily exploring the premises while I was at the meeting. That I had abundant cause for anxiety in regard to the philosophical experiments these young savages might try, the reader will admit when informed of some of their performances. It is often said by those who know Miss Anthony best that she has been my good angel, always pushing and guiding me to work, that but for her pertinacity, I should never have accomplished the little I have. And on the other hand, it has been said that I forged the thunderbolts and she fired them. Perhaps all this is in a measure true. With the cares of a large family, I might in time, like too many women, have become wholly absorbed in a narrow family selfishness had not my friend been continually exploring new fields for missionary labors. Her description of a body of men on any platform complacently deciding questions in which women had an equal interest without an equal voice readily roused me to a determination to throw a firebrand in the midst of their assembly.